This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Welcome then to the first edition of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name is Dan. Hello. This is a brand new show all about science that we're doing every week. You see, it took us a long time to come up with the name. Now, you can download it as a podcast for your phone or your tablet, so you can listen whenever and wherever you fancy. You can do that on iTunes through the free Fun Kids app and over at funkidslive.com. It's not going to cost you a penny. And also, you can hear it on your radio every Saturday at 2 o'clock on Fun Kids. It's a show about really super smart stuff that's like epically cool as well. We'll be finding out loads that we don't know about the whole world. We'll be answering loads of questions that you've got about science, about biology, about the earth as well. And we'll be speaking to actual scientists who are way smarter than us. Also, every week we'll be talking about some of the most evil, crazy and deadly science things in the world. It's in a section called Dangerous Dan, and in a sec we'll do that. We'll talk about how the pufferfish isn't cute and cuddly at all. First though, let's take a trip to where really serious, smart science stuff takes place, in deep space.
Deep Space High, the Universe Handbook with the Science and Technology Facilities Council.
This term's assignment is to write your very own universe handbook. You'll want to cram it full of all the basic things you need to know about space exploration. Yeah, the nuts and bolts of it all. So, let's crack on. Talking of nuts and bolts, Electra, do you think this term you might just remember to tighten your screws to stop various robot limbs from impeding my progress across the room?
Sorry, sir.
Let's start at the beginning. What's the first thing you need to do when you're planning a journey into space?
Make sure you've inflated your lunar lilo.
I thought the holiday might have calmed you lot down. Fat chance. The first thing you need to do is work out where you're going. Have a good look at what's out there. So, how do we observe space?
We use a telescope.
Telescopes aren't the only way to observe space, you know, Alex.
Telescopes are, however, a great place to start. Much better than just using our eyes. Sorry, I'd forgotten you've only got the one blurb. Very nice it is too. So, telescopes, how do they work?
The standard optical telescope works by reflecting or refracting large quantities of light from the visible part of the electromagnetic spectrum to a focal point observable through an eyepiece.
Or basically, it scoops up a load of light and squeezes it down to a small point on your eye, where the image appears a lot bigger than it started.
That's what I said!
You're both right, but optical telescopes only work for the visible universe, stuff our eyes, or eye, sorry blurb, can see.
Well, that's when you need a radio telescope, or an infrared telescope, or even an X-ray telescope.
Cool! Are they like X-ray specs? Can they see through walls?
Behave, Alex. Stats is right. Those sorts of telescopes can pick up waves our eyes can't see to give us even more information about the universe, including images. And infrared telescopes are particularly handy because they also give us information about the temperature of a planet. Have a look at this projection of an infrared image. You'd be right. This planet has been covered in ice for billions of years. What about this one?
Well, it's red and orange in swirls. Is it a hot planet?
You're right. The red-coloured images show us that the temperatures on this planet are much higher.
Much more my style. Get the sunglasses on, crack open the sun cream.
And then you'd burst into flames on this particular planet. Still a bit hotter than you used to, Alex. A toasty 3,000 degrees. So telescopes can tell us what's out there and how hot or cold they are. But if we're going to visit, we'll need to know how far we have to go. How do we measure distance in space?
Sat-nav?
It'd have to be a blooming big one. No, there are many ways to measure distance in space, but the most common method is called parallax.
Parallax? Isn't that the horrible galactic lurgy that everyone in school got last year?
No, Stats, although it does sound a bit like a nasty disease. Parallax is better shown than explained. If you hold your thumb in front of your face and look at it first with your right and then with your left eye, can you tell me what happens?
Weird. It looks like my thumb moves.
Bingo. It seems to move in relation to the background. How much it moves depends on how far away from your face it is. The distance to a star or planet can be measured by tracking its movement relative to other stars or planets further away. You have to take measurements from two places in our orbit to work it out. And the distance is given in light years.
If it's a distance, why is it measured in years? Shouldn't it be miles? And what's light got to do with it anyway?
The light year is used in astronomy because the universe is huge. The nearest star to your solar system, Alex, is Alpha Centauri, 24 trillion miles. And because the numbers are so big, scientists came up with a simpler unit. A light year is the distance that light travels in space in one year. It's around 6 trillion miles, give or take a bit. So Alpha Centauri is 4 light years away. Much simpler. That's the bell. Next time, we'll be having a think about how we prepare ourselves for deep space exploration.
Deep Space High, the Universe Handbook with the Science and Technology Facilities Council.
You can catch up on all the episodes of Deep Space High online at funkidslive.com. You're listening to the Fun Kids Weekly with Dan. Now, every week we'll be looking at some of the most dangerous things in the world in a feature we like to call Dangerous Dan. Now, I thought we'd start with one of the most dangerous creatures on Earth, right? And the worst part about this, it looks kind of cute. But in reality, it is deadly, right? It's the pufferfish. Now, you might have seen these floating about on TV. But at first glance, they're a regular fish. You know, they swim in the tropics. So that's kind of Africa, South America, South Asia as well, where the water's really warm. But when they're faced by a predator, when a much larger fish wants to eat them, they inhale water and air, and they puff up. So they look like a big balloon. And that's not all, because when they then puff up, little spikes pop out of them. So they end up looking like those weird flowers that you blow on in the summer to tell the time, apparently. And if you're a predator, and you're not put off by all those strange things, and you still want to eat it, and crunch through the bloated body, the spiky skin, that's when it becomes really serious. Because all through their body, they have a chemical called tetrodotoxin. It makes your lips and tongue tingle and swell and then stop working. Then you sweat all over, you hyperventilate, you're sick, and if you don't get help right away, then you die. I know it's odd, because when you see a pufferfish, you think they look quite cute in a strange way. It's like the ugly duckling. You kind of love them for it. Clearly you shouldn't. They're deadly. But us humans, though, get this. Yeah, we still eat it. Not just that. In Japan, it's considered a tasty, rare delicacy, like caviar or oysters. It's called fugu. Now, the thing is, not everyone can just grab an oven, a spatula, some salt and pepper, and make it. No, you need to be a specially trained chef to be able to cook this puffer fish for people. The Japanese government will only let you do it if you've been trained for 3 whole years. I don't know what those are about. I don't know, year one you chop, year two you fry, year three you lay the table. I'm not sure. Still though, when the chefs cook it, if they don't make it properly, if they cut the wrong thing, if they heat it poorly, they could properly poison their guests. I think when you hear about that, I start to think my mum's cooking isn't all that bad. Right, you're listening to the Fun Kids Science Weekly with Dan. Time to travel back in time now to meet some other dangerous creatures.
Travel back in time to the age of the dinosaur.
At the Natural History Museum.
Imagine going back in time, not 100 years or 1,000 years, but millions of years. To the age of the dinosaur. Welcome to the Jurassic period, which existed between 145 and 200 million years ago. At the start of the Jurassic period, there was just one huge continent called Pangaea. And with no frozen ice caps, sea levels were much higher than they are today. And much of the Earth's surface was therefore underwater.
Uh-oh,
Something's moving.
We better watch our step. During the Jurassic period, Pangaea began to separate. The northern half, called Laurasia, started to break away, forming North America and Eurasia. What we otherwise call Europe and Asia, from the southern half, Gondwana, that included Antarctica, Madagascar, India, Australia, Africa, and South America.
Wow, there's a whole new ocean.
Lagoons and massive lakes initially formed in the spaces created by the moving land masses. Eventually, these became the oceans that we know today. The Jurassic period was much hotter than we experience today, with hot and dry deserts in the middle of the land masses, huge sticky swamps along the coast, and vast forests full of giant ferns and tall leafy green conifers in between. And all sorts of dinosaurs were flourishing, like the knobbly armor-covered Skelidosaurus. Skelidosaurus was a dinosaur which lived in early Jurassic times. Like his close relations, the Stegosaurus and Ankylosaurus, he was a herbivore, meaning he only ate vegetation, not other animals. But with his beak-like a mouth and bony horns, he would have been pretty scary.
Watch out for his tail. He's swinging it this way.
Phew, that was close. Obviously, they aren't around today, but fossilized skeletons of Skelidosaurus found in England have been some of the most complete skeletons ever found, meaning that we know more about Skelidosaurus than many other dinosaurs.
Paleontology, pick.
Today, there are seven continents on the Earth. Europe is one, the others are Asia, Africa, North America, South America, Antarctica, and Australia. But how do we know that there used to be just one continent?
Paleontologists can tell this from fossils and animal life, by investigating land mammals on different continents, but which come from the same family. Scientists can conclude that the only way they could travel such great distances is that they originally came from the same place. One example is the extinct freshwater reptile Mesosaurus. It was a bit like a lizard, and it has been found in Brazil and West Africa, two places that are now thousands of miles apart. The Mesosaurus would never have been capable of swimming such a vast distance.
Travel back in time to the age of the dinosaur, the new interactive exhibition at the Natural History Museum. Walk along life-size moving animatronic dinosaurs and other strange creatures among the smells and sounds of the prehistoric Jurassic swamps and Cretaceous deserts. Find out more at nhm.ac.uk. But watch out for what's around the corner.
We've got loads more dangerous dinosaurs online. You can catch up at funkidslive.com. So let's have a look at the science stuff that's happened in the news this week. Because a biologist has discovered that some worms may be the saviours of the world. You know plastic bags that you use to take your shopping home, and they're cheap, they're really useful. They're terrible for the environment though, because when they're put underground, when they're thrown away, they take centuries to break down. But a Spanish scientist called Federica Bertaccini was clearing some worms out of a beehive when she put them into a small plastic bag while she cleared the bee's home. When she came back, the worms had eaten their way through the bag. Now, these worms are the only known animals that eat plastic. So if they can find a way to get loads of them underground into rubbish tips all over the world, maybe they can eat the leftover plastic that won't rot, and they can save the planet. Also, other scientists, spacey, smart scientists, they've discovered a planet where the surface is as hot as our sun. It's called Kelt-9b, catchy name, and it's 650,000 light years away from us on Earth. And it takes just 2 days to complete an orbit of the big star in its galaxy, which is incredible when you remember it takes us 365 days to orbit our sun. The problem is, though, the star is so hot and the gases that make it up are so unstable, it's not going to exist for a very long time at all. Just a million years. That's not a long time, really, in space terms. It is the Fun Kids Science Weekly with Dan. Now, if you've been listening to the show and you've heard all about the dangerous creatures and the deep space and the dinosaurs, and it's kind of fascinated you, and you've come up with some questions about sciencey stuff that you need to know the answer to, well, do me a favour. Send them over to me on the Fun Kids website. In the next few weeks, we'll call up a genius professor person and we'll get that sorted, right? Send them to me now, funkidslive.com. So it's time for a professor of our own now. It's Hallux, who's talking about snot.
Professor Hallux's Happy Health Help Desk, with support from the Wellcome Trust.
Aha! I've got a call! Hallux's Happy Health Help Desk.
Hello, Professor Hallux. Why is snot sometimes green?
Noses are pretty grubby places. Almost anything could get sniffed up your nose, and snot, or nasal mucus, is there to help filter the air and trap tiny particles, like a sticky doormat. But that doesn't explain why it can be green at times. It's all to do with snot's germ-busting powers. You wouldn't know to look at it, but snot is a bit of a superhero. It contains white blood cells, antibodies, and enzymes that can kill harmful germs. The green colour comes from an enzyme called myeloperoxidase, which is found inside neutrophils, which are a type of white blood cell. Because there's lots of neutrophils in snot, all that myeloperoxidase makes it look green. And all those trapped germs are a very good reason not to pick your nose. Think of all those bacteria on your fingers. Yuck. Always use a clean tissue to blow your nose and make sure you throw it away and wash your hands, especially if you have a cold. And an even better reason not to eat your bogies, no matter how hungry you are.
Discover more medical facts you've always wondered about on the Fun Kids website, funkidslive.com. Professor Hallux's Happy Health Help Desk, with support from the Wellcome Trust.
We'll have more from Professor Hallux at the same time next week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly, and you can catch up with all of his episodes online right now. Download them for free at funkidslive.com. You're listening to the Fun Kids Science Weekly with Dan. Big space stuff in the news this week. Scientists think they've discovered a brand new planet. So on the phone to tell us more about it is Josh Barker, who works at the National Space Centre. Hello, Josh.
Hello.
So, new planet in the sky. Tell us more.
Yeah, that's right. So we found another planet orbiting around a different star out there in the universe. And this one's rather special, as it seems to be the hottest planet that we've ever found.
The hottest planet we've ever... So how hot is our sun? Because that's probably the hottest thing I know.
Yeah, the hottest thing in our solar system is our sun. And that sits about just under 6,000 degrees. So about 5,500 to 6,000 degrees Celsius. In comparison, this planet is about 4,500 degrees. So it's almost as hot as our sun. In fact, it's about 10 times hotter than Venus, which is the hottest planet in our own solar system.
And how big is it?
It's probably about the sort of size of Jupiter, maybe a little bit bigger. Because of how hot it is, the atmosphere, so the gas around it, is actually boiling away, spraying out into space. That makes it really difficult to work out exactly how big it is. But we think about the size of Jupiter.
Am I right in thinking with our sun that it's not like flames and fire that's making it hot?
You're quite right. It's not a big ball of fire, as often people think. It's actually really, really hot gas. Now, interestingly, a bit like fire, that gas can sort of leap out off the surface and form these great loops that we call prominences. And you can get some fantastic images of, you know, these outbursts of gas and material from the surface of the sun. So it's not quite fire in the same way you might have one at home, but it is extremely hot.
So why is this new planet so much hotter than our sun? Is it different gases? What's making it burn so brightly?
Well, we think one of the main reasons it's much hotter than a lot of the other planets is because it's a lot closer to its star that it's orbiting around. So, for example, the Earth is far enough away from our sun that it takes a year, 365 and a quarter days, to get all the way around. This star is much, much closer. In fact, it's so close that its year is only 2 days long.
So do they have Christmas every year?
Well, probably, yes. So they'd have Christmas pretty much every other day, which would be pretty exciting.
You'd be so fat,
although you'd get very
you?
Old very quickly.
You'd have so much turkey living on that planet. How far away is it from where we are?
It's about 620 light years away, so a very, very long way away. We're certainly not going to be visiting it anytime soon.
And how long has finding this planet kind of been in the works? Because I heard something about they thought it might be there about 2 years ago.
Yeah, so a lot of these searches for planets can take a long time, and that's because they're very difficult to spot. Although they're pretty big, planets are very large objects, they're so far away that they appear very, very tiny. So we have to take very careful measurements using telescopes, looking at stars, see how they change in brightness and things like that. So these things can take many years to figure out.
Now, most planets, Josh, they're around for about a billion years, aren't they? That's like the life cycle of a lot of planets.
Yeah, so depending on the star around them, they can last a few billion years. That shouldn't be too much of an issue.
What about this one, though? The fact that it's so close to, like, its major star, and it only takes 2 days to go around something, and it's burning so brightly, is it going to be around for that long as well?
Probably not. This one's probably only going to last a few hundred million years, and that's a couple of reasons. First of all, we think a lot of this planet is boiling away, being turned to gas, and that's being spread out across the solar system around that star because of how hot it is. And also, what we understand about the star it's orbiting around is that star seems to be getting bigger. It seems to be start expanding. Within about 100 to 200 million years, the star will be so big that it will actually reach this planet, and the planet will sort of get sucked inside the star and probably be incinerated.
So it's just around a few hundred million years, not a big deal?
Yeah, just a few hundred million years. We're relatively short in space to...
What's the name of it?
The name of it is a rather inspiring Kelt 9b.
Is there a chance we can change that to make it more Jupiter-y?
There's always a chance. So International Astronomical Union are the group of people who gather together to decide on names. And they often decide on names fairly regularly, a couple of times a year. So there's a chance that we may end up renaming it. Although most planets tend to be named after the telescope that found them, which is the Kelt in this case, and the star number that they found. So that's the Kelt 9 star and B for the second planet that we found around it.
Now, Josh, I've got one last kind of deep question for you. You know, aliens. Wise, scientists always say, well, it's life, we're looking for life as we know it. You know,
yeah.
That's the phrase. On this boiling hot planet that's so far away, is there a chance there could be life not as we know it there?
There's always a chance. So whenever we look for aliens, we obviously look for things that we could survive in, that life down here on Earth could survive. Now, we were all moaning just a few weeks ago when it reached about 30 degrees here in the UK, so 4,500 degrees, probably a bit too tough for us to survive in. But the interesting thing is that life that we understand here on the Earth is very similar to a lot of the conditions we find on Earth. And maybe there is a small chance that perhaps life could exist in weird and wonderful locations that we would have no chance of surviving in. Now, it's probably not likely. It would be a very, very difficult environment to live in, but you never know what's out there.
Awesome. Josh, thank you so much for coming on Fun Kids.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Dan, and this is the end of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, we will be back, don't worry, next week.
Ah, yes, see?
All that time we spent thinking about the name Fun Kids Science Weekly was useful because it does exactly what it says on the tin. Now, remember, you can listen to all of our cool science series on the free Fun Kids app, or you can download them for free from iTunes. Find out loads more about that on the Fun Kids website. And you can listen to Fun Kids on DAB Digital Radio across the UK on the free Fun Kids app and online at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB Digital Radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.